Well, Jay, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a little cooped up here. It's time for a move, I think. Get some space, some bigger yard, that kind of thing. What do you think?
You are really going to move? But that's a big deal. Like, you can't do
it
that
in
your
big deal.
You're scared to even leave your living room.
What seems like a big deal moving isn't when you use the right people. You can use these sell your own home situations where you're bartering with a guy in your driveway for 45 minutes and you end up selling for $3, or you can use a professional that makes moving actually simple. Who are we going to use?
But the problem is obviously Tom, but my worry is you're so far, you're in Orleans.
Tom will come to Orleans. He'll go to Russell. He'll go to Clarence Creek. He'll go to west of the Westy Village, wherever it is out there. He'll go anywhere for you and make that experience that you were talking about of nervous or a lot of work, make it seem like nothing. Bastion and Ferguson will literally smooth out the easiest move of your life.
Wow, even in Orleans, I just can't get over that.
Yeah, once you hit 10th line, 11th line, 14th line, he's still coming. He's driving in his brand new Dodge Caravan, carries his family around in, will sell your home. That's what I'm looking for, an easy ride with Bastion and Ferguson. Look them up. He's going to sell you quick and easy. Jordan Lystro. I'm going to say Lystro. Is it Lystro? Me and Steve were arguing about this before the show. Lystro.
I say Lystro, but I have family members who say Lystro. Honestly, either is fine, but I would say Lystro. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. You win, Mark. If she says Lystro, it's Lystro.
Yeah.
Winner. Perfect. So I just confirmed it. You're in Orlando right now.
Yeah.
Living so close to Disney, it sparks the question to me right away. Do you like roller coasters?
I honestly love roller coasters. Like, I was never scared of them as a child. I was like a daredevil and would go on the biggest ones when I just met like the height minimum. But I'm not really a Disney fan. I haven't been probably in like 6 years. My last year of college, I think I went once. But we kind of live like 30 minutes away, so it's not that close for me.
And it's probably way too packed. Is it? It can't be fun if it's packed.
Yeah, and plus, I don't really know about the COVID situation now either. So
yeah, there is that too. The global pandemic may have a small effect on that. So if you didn't hear already, it's Jordan Lystro, a 4-year starter at the University of South Florida, and all-time appearances record holder for the school, which is kind of neat. She's a Canadian professional soccer player who plays for the Orlando Pride and a member of the Canadian women's national team recently at the She Believes Cup. So welcome to our amazing podcast.
Thanks.
Can I make a confession, Mark?
To both I love you? Confessions.
Yeah, so I read that too about the all-time appearance leader. And I was like, so we're like based in Ottawa and we have a friend that Mark coaches with. She's a technical director in Gloucester. Her name's Gina Pacheco. And she went to South Florida. And I was like, I read her bio. Like, I think she started every game. I actually counted her games. That's how nerdy I am to like confirm that you beat her. I'm just, I apologize for that.
Well, I think that we were more successful later on. So we made NCAA tournament. That
yes.
The game here and there. So
you got the games in the tournament. Good, good show.
I'm going to tell Gina. I'm going to remind Gina every morning. I'm going to text her. Yeah. So
sorry, yeah, people actually, I played a pickup game like right before season, and somebody said to me, oh, you actually remind me of Gina Pacheco the way you move on the field. I was like, oh, that's so funny because she went to my school. So yeah.
No way.
It is similar players if you think of it. You're taller, but it is like that holding mid type role, keep the ball, win it back. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So you're, you know, becoming infamous for this crazy route that you had kind of to the pinnacle of soccer. So I want to start kind of from the beginning ish, what we were just talking about, South Florida. So you're in Toronto, where you're from, and you end up at South Florida. Now, I ask this question to most people who go to schools like that. When you were getting recruited or looking to get recruited, did you start at the hot universities first, like the warm weather schools first? Like, you're not applying to Maine or anything like that. Come on.
Honestly, I looked at the ones that were closest to Toronto because I'm so close with my family that I wanted them to be able to come and watch, or, you know, me be able to go home whenever I could.
Yeah.
So Florida was definitely not one that was on the radar.
Wow.
Yeah.
No way. That's crazy. I would be the opposite. I'm looking south, working my way up. And once I get near to, I'm just going to Canadian school. So you're a four-year starter in a D1 school. Okay. So you go through your career, you make tournaments. Like you just said, you are successful, and the NWSL draft happens and you're not taken. So were you expecting to be taken? How does that work? Do you have to put your name in? Do coaches talk to you? Were you like sitting there like, you know, what happened?
So my senior year, unfortunately, was probably the worst year for our team in terms of performance out of my 4 years, which was really hard for me because at the time our team wasn't really in the spotlight. So they weren't really looking beyond the top players that were in the NCAA or in our conference. So we also, USF is known to have a lot of internationals and a lot of international talent. So there's no real like U.S. national team player that would be playing at our school. So it kind of, NWSL didn't really look to USF as one of those, you know, main powerhouse schools where we're going to draft a lot of players from.
Yeah.
Or teams in that sense. So I knew my senior year, kind of as it got towards the end, that we weren't going to make the tournament. And it was hard for me because coming to the school, I was like, I want to play pro as soon as I'm done. So I actually just spoke to my coaches about opportunities overseas. At that point, I didn't care where I was going. I just knew that I wanted to play pro and try and go as far as I could. So I entered my name in the draft, like probably the last day possible, just, you know, to see what would happen. And being a defensive center midfielder, you don't have stats that people are drawn to. You don't score a million goals. So they're not like, okay, we need this player. So it's almost like, let's look at the team performance, and we didn't do well. So it was unfortunate, but that's just the way it worked out. So I spoke to my coaches, and I actually had a volunteer assistant at the time who played pro and coached pro in Spain. So he came on my last year, which was very random because he actually, his wife was, you know, doing research at the school. So just very weird situation, but it worked out very well for me because he was able to connect me with pro teams in Spain. And that's kind of how I was able to go play in Spain right after college.
So Mark, you just went absolutely mute while you fix it up. I think I'm going to ask your next question. And look how rattled he is. This is my favorite part. Like, I love that we have a Canadian international, like, that we're excited, but I'm also excited that he looks stupid. So it's just like between friends, like he knows it. I think he's going to get into Tenerife. So that's obviously how you got to Tenerife. Yeah. And that's your connection. I guess the question I had, like one of the things I wrote down, and we talked to a few local girls who have gone over and played. Miranda Smith is playing in Finland. That's one that came through Ottawa. But there's a couple in Italy at clubs like you've heard of. But in the women's game, is it more of a crapshoot? Because even if you've heard of the club, you don't know what they're doing with the women's program. And then, I'm asking a dumb question. Is that a, like, the crapshoot and the, like, it's a bit of a guessing game in that respect?
Yeah, I mean, I graduated in the spring because I knew I wasn't going into the NWSL. So I just kind of took my senior year, did one more class, and graduated in the spring. And then in May, I got the opportunity to actually go to Spain to see, like, you know, what it was like. And I had been to Spain with provincial teams. So I was like, oh, I love Spain. Like, I love the soccer there because of the style. So that was just knowing that, I was like, okay, I'm excited to go. So I went down and I mean, I loved my experience with the team. The training sessions were amazing. So nice. Technical. The players were like doing these tricks that I probably could never learn to do, but it was amazing, just totally different. And I mean, the living part of it was, obviously I wasn't focused on that when I went down for those 2 weeks, but that's kind of what is hard, especially in the women's game, is we have players who are Spanish working all day, and then we would train from 8 to 10 p.m. So the players like myself and the other three international players from Brazil and other countries would kind of not know what to do with our time all day, because you're waiting till 8 p.m. And I live, like, Tenerife is an island. So can't really go to the beach all day and be exhausted for training. So it was just kind of finding stuff to do. And then, you know, when I don't speak Spanish, it was really tough.
It's a tough transition. Yeah. So I guess in the respect of,
can you hear me, Steve?
Yeah, you're back, Mark.
Am I back?
I'll hand it back to you as Mr. Host again here, but I'm going to follow up on Tenerife. I know you're in one aspect, then it's, would you consider it almost a little less professional in that way than when you're at South Florida, where it's like an NCAA school is like TikTok business and they're running their program? So you're coming from a potentially more professional environment.
I was, for sure. And I mean, the facilities at USF were, I mean, top of the line. So when I was in Spain, we're playing on a turf field for our games and our training sessions. And obviously it wasn't like a big club like Barcelona, where, you know, maybe you train at top of the line facilities and it makes a difference. But for me, it was the one turf field, and then we couldn't really, you know, use the field, or there wasn't a gym where you could, you know, go and do extra training, which I was very used to in college. I like consider myself like a busy body, so I'd always be going from the next thing to the next thing. And there it was like, okay, I have all this time just to relax and not, you know, train as much as I want to. So that got tough. And I know it's probably different in the men's game, obviously, because they have more of that structured routine and facilities to, you know, accommodate their goals.
Last question, Mark, and I'll hand it back to you. So what was the standard like when you were at Tenerife in that league? I'm going to assume, maybe naively, that probably over the last 3 years, it's maybe gotten better. I think Barcelona actually has a team. They took over, I can't remember who it was, but I think they took a club over. Again, like, I feel like I'm like this Ottawa Diary tonight with you, so I apologize, but we have another player there named Kayla Adamick who's playing at Tenerife right now. What's that?
We actually switched places because she was training with Orlando and then I was in Tenerife. No. Now I'm in Orlando and she's in Tenerife.
Oh my God, I didn't know that part. Wow. Oh my God. Crazy. So it's good I'm doing this boring dictionary name drop, so we got a story out of it. Like, but so what would you compare the standard to in the Spanish league? Because I unfortunately don't see any Spanish. I've seen some French games. Obviously, I've seen the Champions League. I've seen the Women's League in Great Britain, which is unreal right now, and NWSL. But I haven't seen the Spanish game. Like, how would you rate the level?
The level was great. It was just different. Like, it took me a couple of games to kind of get used to, like, the rhythm, because the pressure wasn't as high. Like, I wasn't used to having no pressure on my back when I was in the midfield.
Got it.
But everything was just like quick and so technical. Like, the ball stayed on the ground the entire game. There's no long diagonal balls. So actually adjusted my game, because when I was in college, I felt like I used to really hit those long diagonal balls. And now when I was in Spain, I was just looking for those, you know, 1-2s and quick passes on the ground. But I wouldn't say that the level was worse than NWSL. It's just totally different.
Different.
Definitely more technical and less athletic.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a standard American school versus professional kind of response we get a lot here, you know, the athleticism in the U.S. and everything like that. But that's kind of neat. That probably improved your game, right? I mean, getting that technical aspect added to that physicality you had in college.
Yeah, no, I think it was actually like a good it would be a good country for me to play in, just because I think in college I was a technical player, but I was also athletic. So being in Spain, I could keep up technically, but then I was able to use my athleticism.
Yeah.
And that kind of got me over some of the other players, so
you were there 6 months or so, give or take, and then you came home.
Mm-hmm.
Was your contract up, or did you say, like, I'm sick of the beach. What was the negative spin there, or if there was one?
Yeah, so I had spoke to the president when I originally signed and just wanted in my contract to have the ability to, you know, once Christmas hits, to decide if I wanted to return for the second half of the season. Oh, cool. And it was just, I mean, I loved the soccer, but it was really hard to live there. And I mean, I was away from home for 4 years, so it was a different kind of homesick. Yeah. I came from USF being the captain of my team to having all my friends there every day and being able to just speak to people, and not being able to speak to anyone or have anyone understand me was just so hard. Like, on the field was one thing, because I mean, you get away with it playing soccer. And was it hard to, you know, not be able to direct someone in front of me left or right or man on?
Yeah. But
then just like going into team dinners and not, you know, being able to have any substantial conversation. It was like, this is so tough, because, you know, they don't really know my personality and I can't really understand theirs because we don't speak the same language. Yeah. So that part was really, really tough for me. And at the time I was kind of contacting the national team, and the reason for going to Spain was to get a look from them. Right. And I wasn't getting positive feedback in terms of the league. So that kind of was, to me, like, I'm not enjoying the hours I'm not playing soccer, and I'm not on the way to achieve a goal of mine. So maybe I need to look somewhere else.
Yeah. That's really, you know what? That's funny. Like, I'm a big soccer guy. Like, we're soccer fans to the absolute death. And it's funny, I never really made that connection that you just talked about. I'm always like, you know, I'm a Man United fan, so I'm like, why don't we just sign him from here, you know, do this. But like, you don't realize that your entire, like, imagine one of us or anyone listening, just go live in China for 2 years. Not, you know what I mean? Like, that's a culture shock. You can't understand. You have no relationships. Like, that's a brutal part of, I mean, so, you know, we say soccer players get everything. That it's a grind. It's not as easy as we may think of us, you know, watching it on TV. So thank you for that. That's a really neat point. Was the best word I came up with for that, but it was a neat point.
It's just also different too. Like, you're looking at it from a male standpoint, like, you're making a lot of money, so it's okay. Sure. Maybe you can justify that sacrifice for a couple of years, but when you have, you know, when you're not making enough money, and then when you have the language barrier, it's like, I don't know if this is the right decision for me.
Yeah.
I think it's probably amplified, like, which is part of your story and like the, how you're getting to where you got, like, that's what I was asking a little bit earlier. Like, Tenerife is a club most people have heard of, but you don't know what state their women's game is at. And you just told us, and that's not a shot at them, but you told us they're training from 8 to 10, you know, like, Zidane's not training from 8 to 10 with Real Madrid. Like, they've got their day lined up ideally, and they're taken care of. So it's an interesting piece of that grind. I would agree, Mark, that it's neat.
Is Steve saying Tenerife properly?
I say Tenerife, but I think it's Tenerife.
I think it's Tenerife. I think you're right. Yeah.
I didn't want to get him away, but let him get away with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you came home, I'm reading, you know, as much research as I can about you here, but you came home and it's kind of like, you're almost calling it quits. You got a job, right? I mean, you were a sales rep. And essentially, I don't want to put words in your mouth or anything like that, but you were essentially not cold calling or emailing NWSL clubs for trials. Is that what happened?
So I had gotten back, and at this time I, you know, was like, okay, where else can I play? Like, I'll go to Sweden. I'll go somewhere where, you know, more people speak English. I don't really care where it is.
Yeah.
When I got back, I also, like, I just wasn't, I didn't really understand and know how to, you know, sign for another club, because, for instance, when I was in college, my Spanish coach did the whole process for me. Like, there was no real, like, agent looks at different teams. I didn't know what I needed to do. So I got back and I spoke to an agent who's, like, more on the men's side. And he was kind of like, you know, Jordan, this is not really a good time to, like, transfer to another team. Like, leagues are already starting, and didn't give me any, like, positivity in terms of, you know, you can go to another club, you just got to wait a little, or let's ride it out and see what other teams offer. But it was kind of like, okay, well, you know, there's not really a team for you right now. So that was just shocking to me. And I didn't know better at the time. I was like, okay, I guess like that's the way it is. So I was always interested in medical device sales when I was in college. I knew that that's what I wanted to do after soccer.
Yeah.
So I just started emailing a bunch of companies, and you know, one of the companies that I really wanted was Stryker, and they're very successful in the medical device industry. So I had an interview with them and I just got the job. So it was almost like in my head, well, am I done with soccer? Because I just got my dream job post soccer. So what's happening? So I accepted the position because at that time I had no offers to go anywhere to play. And I started that job and I really liked it, but I was constantly on Instagram looking at soccer stuff and on Twitter seeing all these updates from my friends. And I was like, oh, this bothers me so much because I want to play.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I was, you know, I even peaked yet. Like I'm one of those players that I think peaked later on and is still peaking. So I was like, I have more to offer in the soccer world. I worked my entire life to play soccer. I mean, like the OSA 4 days a week as a child, like endured some, you know, tough training sessions with, you know, just very tough coaches.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like I should be done right now. I just would train on the side. Like my days were insane. I would wake up. I had to be at work at like 6:30, 7 o'clock. So I wake up at like 5, do my running in the morning, go to work all day. I would be done at 4. Then I would go lift and then go straight to a technical session. Like I swear to you, this was my life every single day. And it was exhausting. And I was like, you know what? This might never pay off. Like I might, something might never come of this, but at least I know I tried and I did everything I could, because if I didn't, obviously I would have regrets for the rest of my life. So I did that. And then I'm really close with David Copeland Smith from Beast Mode Soccer. And I've trained with him since I was 14 years old. He constantly like would, you know, train me online or train me in LA. And he just gave me that confidence that, you know what, Jordan, you're good enough to play in the NWSL. I know that played in Spain and now you're working, but you have the technical capabilities to play in this league. You just got the opportunity. So hearing that from him, who trains, you know, Alex Morgan on a regular basis, it's like, okay, like he knows what it takes to be in this league. So I'm just going to keep training and hopefully I get that opportunity. So I reached out to my college coach and she was like, okay, let's start emailing NWSL teams and see what their response is. So obviously my first pick was Orlando because we would play against Orlando Pride in college. So I knew what it was like. And the Orlando Pride coach, you know, didn't know me at all. And it was his second year. So he said, come to the open tryout and then we'll go from there. So I got invited to that open tryout and then went there. It was 2 days. We played an inner squad, small sided games the first day, an inner squad the second day. And I just kind of played for my life at that point. And it was enough to get called into preseason. So,
Were you playing? Like, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, was it 2 years after Tenerife before you? So, during the 2 years, were you playing somewhere? Like, I know you were training, but.
Yeah, no, I was training and I would like go to LA and train with Dave and just do like very technical stuff. And then. Wow. I'd play like pickup soccer with people, but no, like I was honestly turned off of like club soccer in Ontario. So
That's what I was wondering, if you're on a club team. And the best, like Mark, if you just got a medical job after you played, like, would you be getting up at 5 and then training again at 4?
I don't get up at 5 for my regular job.
Yeah.
I'm late for my regular job. No, that's funny you say that's such a theme with the athletes that have reached the absolute top level, is that you have that drive in you. It's that simple. If you don't have that drive, like 99% of the population in your situation is still doing what you were doing as a job, but you have that drive.
And people still say to me like, oh, you're crazy for leaving medical device sales. Like, you know how much money you make in that industry?
Yeah.
And that's great. Like, yeah, the money is awesome, but at the end of the day, if you're not passionate about it, then the money can only do so much. So
that's right.
I mean, I'm really happy I made the decision.
So. Yeah. So I don't know if this is correct, but like, you got your invite to preseason, everything's going like amazing. You're flying, then you tear your hamstring.
Yeah.
Is that like a day before camp or something?
That's perfect.
Yeah. So the the open tryout was the beginning of February, and then preseason was supposed to start March 1st. So after the open tryout, they contacted me and said, you know, we want you to come to preseason. And we're going to have formal sessions at the end of February. So if you want to come out to those, like, feel free. Some of the girls in market come out, whatever. So I was living in Tampa at the time, and went to the first one, went great, was driving up for the second one. It was like a rainy day. And we were doing passing patterns, and I went to go full sprint to a through ball. And in a second, I heard the pop, fell to the ground, and literally was in so much pain. And then, yeah, got up and literally couldn't walk for a good 3 weeks. Like, it was so painful. Knock on wood, but never have had a serious injury before. So this was like, okay, great, perfect timing. So, So my Orlando Pride coach was amazing. He was like, okay, well, you know what? You're still going to get your opportunities. Do whatever it takes.
Good for him.
You know, recover, and then we'll give you a shot when you're healthy. So preseason started 2 weeks after, and I went to preseason and watched the training sessions, and then COVID hit the second week. So that was a blessing in disguise for me, because I was able to get healthy.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. So like, you got this short-term deal, from what I'm reading, right? You got a short-term deal at Orlando. Is that the first one you got to kind of cover the loan? Like, I don't know. I'm reading like 11 players were gone, and you
because I loved 11 players when I was younger. My dad's all over that. I thought you were talking about the website. Never mind.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
but yes, 11 players were 11 players. Yeah. But no, so they worded it kind of weird, but it was, it's a short-term player like contract. And so those were the players that were signed for the fall series. So at that time they signed us just for the fall series, and then a renegotiation for after the fall series. So 11 players on our team either asked to be loaned to another team or, participate based on COVID. So it was a good opportunity for me when I came back in, because, you know, there was a lot of players missing. So I was able to get in quick.
Finally some luck. Yeah. You got there. Holy moly. And the best part is you've now played that fall series. You played well, you started a lot of games, and then now you've earned another full year plus an option. Am I wrong?
Yeah. So yeah, the fall series was great. I think it was, an opportunity to just put all that hard work to use. Like, I was given the opportunity, and I was just going to do as much as I could with it, because, you know, at the end of the day, that could have been my only opportunity was that fall series. So those three for me, because too many yellow cards, but let's just do that.
We'll get into that later, Jordan.
Okay. And then after, we had a meeting at the end of the season, and my coach, you know, wanted to sign me for this year and then next year possibly. So
So I gotta like talk about the contract piece for just a sec, because I don't think everybody fully knows, and I'm probably gonna butcher the number, so just tell me like where I go wrong. But in that, and in the NWSL, there's X amount of places for Canadian internationals that are sort of put aside or whatever, and they're placed, and their contracts, the salaries are paid for by the CSA, the Canadian Soccer Association. Then you've got, and this is where I totally lose it a little bit too, you've got the same thing with the American team on their end. So you talk about all these places now being filled up already because you're not on the national team. So I'm trying to make people aware that listen to this, how hard it is to get one of those remaining places. So on top of your hamstring, I guess COVID's a blessing. We can't say it's a negative in that respect. Yeah. Then you're trying to fight for one of those spots. Like, that's difficult. And I guess without beating to death, I don't know if you're sick of being asked about the pathway in Canada and for women and all that, but that is, you're forced to the European route and into maybe a Tenerife situation that's not the most comfortable. Although, and from what you said, it wasn't terrible. It was just a different fit and whatnot. Like, I just wanted people to know how hard it is to get that. So like, we talked about this, we actually had Laura Armstrong on to talk a little bit about it based on that article again from you. And like, is there a solution? Is the solution just a silly one? Like, you know, get a Canadian team, get more spots, get a Canadian league. You know, are there any things that maybe Mark and I, who are just two idiots sitting here in Ottawa, aren't thinking, like, the obvious that you would recommend, or because you've been through this whole bumpy path?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, one of the main reasons that I was speaking, that Laura contacted me and then I was so willing to speak to her, was just because there's such a lack of knowledge at that age. And it's
yeah.
like, nobody knows what they're supposed to do and there's nobody helping you. And it's like, but I want to play soccer. Like, how are there no options for me now? Like, I grew up in an environment where everything was planned out for me. I was going to the OSA Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
And I knew, you know, what was going to happen until I went to college. So, I mean, what I would want to see is to have, you know, Toronto FC, Montreal Impact, Vancouver Whitecaps in the NWSL, because I think that's the solution. A Canadian pro league, personally, would I want to play in it? Not really, just because now, like, you would still have to grow.
And
at my age, I wouldn't want to play in that.
Need to be at the top. There's nothing wrong with that attitude. Yeah.
Yep. So that I think would be a solution. And I think that Canadians would, you know, strive to achieve a realistic goal, because they would see players that are on the national team playing for Toronto FC or playing for Montreal Impact. And it would be more realistic than having, you know, just a few international spots and players playing overseas. And then from a social media standpoint, I think that the game has really grown in terms of, everyone is being tracked now, which is very nice. Like, if somebody is playing in Germany on Twitter, you will see which player is playing in Germany and when their game is.
Yeah.
And it allows national team coaches to be like, oh, I didn't know about this player, but they're all over Twitter scoring goals. So that, with social media growing and everything, I mean, that only helps, you know, players like myself at the time just not being heard of, and then, you know, doing really well and then being able to, you know, be on those social media channels. So,
Mark, I'm totally taking over with another question. I'm sorry, but like, I've got so many, like, I have a full page for you. It's but anyways, what was I going to say? Yeah. So I don't want it to come out as a negative, but it's one of the shocking parts of your story to me. I guess shocking maybe sounds too headliney or whatever, but because you'd been through the national system, the part where you're at USF and they're asking you and what position, just as a coach, I find that, wow, like, but I guess it's speaking to this issue of when you get to a certain peak or point, sorry, in the pathway, we've got that gap. But I would have expected a player like you at USF and had been through the program, they know, like, you know, so that part was a bit odd, but I think you're probably speaking to it with now, and you're, you know, I think you're 25. So like, you're not that old. Like, social media was around back then, but it has grown to a point where the awareness is probably there better, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's, that definitely has helped a lot of players just recently being recognized for things that they're doing if they're not with the national team.
Yeah, I think Bev Priestman did a good job of that at the She Believes Cup. I don't know if that's a good segue for you, Mark, but like, I think.
Speaking of the She Believes Cup, thank you, Steve.
How'd that come up?
Yeah, look at that teamwork. This is the pinnacle of radio. You're at the pinnacle of soccer. We're at the pinnacle. Is this even radio? Is podcast even radio? I don't even know. I'm like, kids like screaming right now behind me. This is how professional it is. But yeah, so the She Believes Cup, now you've got it. Finally, the attention of the best of the best. You get the call, She Believes Cup. Where are you when you get the call? Tell me what you do. I need to know, because for me, I'm like, you know, I don't know. I'm throwing things. I don't know. What are you doing when you get that call?
So I was actually at the mall, which is kind of embarrassing, but I was just, you know, around. And I see a WhatsApp call, and like, I don't really use WhatsApp unless it's for like, when I played in Spain, that's all they used. So I was like, huh, that's kind of interesting. And like, my Orlando team will sometimes use it. So I was like, oh, I better get this call. Like, it's from a plus something number. I wonder who it is. So I answer and I recognize her voice from the beginning. And I was honestly shocked. I knew that playing for Orlando would help, but I didn't realize like how fast I would be able to be called in. And of course it helps with new coaching staff because, you know,
they're
willing to bring new people in. So. Yeah. She said, you know, Jordan, I know that you've kind of created your own path to pro, and I really want to invite you into the next camp. And, you know, this is not, you should just feel confident going into the camp. It's not a test or anything. Just, you know, do your best. And I know you're familiar with a lot of these girls. So just come in and, you know, show us what you have. And do your thing. Yeah. So she, from the start, I really wasn't nervous going in because one, I know probably three quarters of the team from playing with them. And also just the way she spoke about it, it's like, you know, this isn't going to be your only chance. So do show us what you have, but there's going to be other opportunities if, let's say, you know, you're not ready at this point, which was just so nice to hear after all these years.
No kidding.
I picture her at a booster juice and like she gets the news and like squeezes and like everything explodes. And like, I'm picture like, what did you do at the mall? Did you like walk out dignified or what?
I was like just actually coming out of a store. I think it was Zara, but anyway, coming out of the store and I had her own speaker and I was like, okay, what? Like, did this just really happen? I was like, I probably should call my parents because they're going to be like ecstatic. So,
yeah.
Yeah. That's so crazy. That, and you know what? That shows me right now, because we don't know a lot about Bev Priestman yet. You know, she's new in the job, but just hearing she said to you is like top level management to me. It's like, just that one line for me anyway, is this isn't your only chance. So don't come in and think like the world's ending if you don't make it. That to me automatically puts you at ease and you go and you're actually yourself at that point. Yeah. But it's still not over at that point, right? Like it was like a big squad and you still had to, you got the call and then you still had to make that last little, you know, cut situation. So when did you like, I forget who did I ask this? Did I ask Vanessa Gill this?
Yeah.
Where it's like, did they put like a list on the door or how did you find out you made the final roster?
It was outside a homeroom, Mark. They put it outside of the homeroom.
But that's so funny that you asked that, because with the provincial team, it was like, oh, let's whisper in your ear as you walk out if I need to speak to you. If they need to speak to you, you're cut. So I've seen every type of way to get cut before.
Wow. Yeah.
So, no, she actually put it in the WhatsApp group. She put the roster, a picture of the roster, but everyone had to remain in training. So either way, you are still training for the entire camp. So
no way. Okay.
Yeah, she's rostering for She Believes. Okay. So it almost, I mean, of course it's going to suck if you don't roster, but at the end of the day, you're still training for the rest of the time, getting that experience. So
I didn't know that. That's actually good, because I know there's a young Olivia Smith there that we're actually going to have on the show soon. Nice. And what an experience. That I was always wondering, like, now if you get cut, like, are you just sent home and that's it? But having that experience for her would have been legendary. Yeah,
okay. It was awesome. And I mean, if you came in late or didn't show well in the couple sessions and didn't get rostered, I mean, you had the rest of camp to show what you had to show. And then hopefully the next camp you get called in. So just endless opportunities throughout the camp.
Yeah. Yeah. So now the She Believes Cup happens, like you start the second game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when do you know that you're starting? Night before, hour before? Like what's the nitty gritty here?
So she would tell us 2 days before. So we would go into the, you know, pregame practice knowing what the starting lineup is, and then we would focus on, you know, the starting lineup and kind of working with them. Maybe. Mm-hmm. So 2 days before I would know. And I mean, she put the roster out on the PowerPoint and I was like, wow, okay, great.
Yeah. Well,
in the first game for the US, it was like, there was 20 minutes left and they were telling me to warm up. So I was like, okay, great. Like, you go in at such a crucial time. It's 0-0 against the US.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and then they actually ended up scoring. So Bev kept the team that she had in, which was completely fine. And yeah, then I got the opportunity for the next game and I was like, okay, great. Let's just go out. And
I always thought you should have come on against your physicality, your like athleticism would have been so good against the U.S. This is the biggest armchair quarterback podcast ever. Hindsight, I would have done that. We would have won 3-0.
Yeah, of course.
So with that, like you start now, like, are you, what's the vibe? Are you nervous? Are you still nervous before these games, or are you one of those, like, just give me this, I'm going to take it with both hands? How did you feel walking out of the tunnel?
So similar to the way I felt before the first NWSL game, like going into it, obviously there's thoughts in my head of, I haven't played a real game, a professional game in how long, like that crossed my mind numerous times. Now I'm playing with Marta and Sydney LaRue. If I don't give them the right pass, like,
yeah, good point.
So that's like all in my head, but at the end of the day, I like looked at my preparation and was like, I grinded so hard for the last however long, like I don't know how I could have worked harder. So I'm getting this opportunity for a reason and I'm just going to make the most of it and like just feel confident that I did everything I could to prepare myself. So yeah, I mean, I was kind of just numb. Like I was a little nervous before, but it was almost like I knew that I know that I've wanted to be here for so long that like, I'm not, what's the point of being nervous? Like I've earned this spot. So
yeah,
I was more numb than nervous.
Yeah. So I'm going to flip back to this other thought that went in my head is Canada missed the boat on you for a few years. Mm-hmm. You're eligible for Italy, correct?
Yeah.
Ooh. Did that ever cross your mind? Did you ever like contact Italy and be like, you know?
So my grandparents were all born in Italy and we just like being Italian, we're so close to everyone, like families, everything. So I would grow up going, I was so close with my grandfather, my mom's dad. Like I would go to their house every single day and soccer would be on and we would just watch and talk and watch and talk. He'd come to every one of my games.
That's amazing.
And if he missed a game, we'd literally like sit down and I'd draw out like how I scored goals and like he was just so invested. So soccer was huge and obviously, you know, they're Italian so and they spoke Italian. So I was always interested in, you know, their upbringing and just Italy in general. So my dad would always say to me, Jordan, why don't you try and get dual citizenship and just try for the Italian national team? You know, if Canada's not giving you a call, like look at the men's Italian national team, like how would you not want to be, you know, around that? And it never did the same thing for me. Like when I wore the national team jersey at U17, like it's the most indescribable moment. Like I grew up in Canada, I didn't grow up in Italy. Yes, my family's from there, but it's different. So they'd always try and tell me that and I would just be like, okay, no, I want to play for Canada. And they're like, well, you're not getting the opportunity. I was like, doesn't matter, like it's not the same for me. So I definitely tried to explore that route, but Canada was always, you know,
top of the chart.
Yeah.
You know what? That's a freaking great answer. Like, that's a really good answer. Like, Canadians, if there's Canadians drinking their Tim Hortons, like, they better be crying after that answer because it's like, I want to play for Canada. I also, like Mark said, part of like talking to elite athletes like yourself and that we're seeing the, you know, there's always a struggle, there's always an obstacle. And then there's a goal and to get to your goal, you go through all that stuff. Like your goal, of course, playing in the NWSL, I'm sure is a sub goal, but I think your top goal was always Canada and just the Italian piece to that. It feels to me like I just see like a windshield wiper. You're blocking it off. Like enough, like I'm going to this goal. Like that's a great answer.
Yeah. And I mean, like when I played in Spain, like my family couldn't come watch.
Yeah.
And, you know, my friend that I grew up in high school with who would see me miss lunch with them to go train on the turf, like they weren't watching me in South Florida and they weren't watching me in Spain, but to be able to like one day be at BMO and for them all to come and watch, like that gives me chills. So
that'll be amazing. Like I honest to God, I hope for you after talking to you get that opportunity. Like and I think your answer earlier about the, you know, it's probably like something people have said, but for the pathway for the league for NWSL, like, I think that probably, like, that I would say that's my answer. Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, investing in a women's side, like, the Man Cities, the Barcas, the Real Madrids all have now. Like, it just makes sense. And that, I think that's the next step. I mean, I feel like I've solved everything, Jordan. So thanks for coming. And we'll just send this into the CSA. They're going to use this as the solution. But I don't know. I think that's, like, that's how I feel. I feel like I've wrapped things up. Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah. No, I'm going to go from Steve solving world hunger to a quick Olympic question. I heard you say that, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Olympics is what you'd rather have than the World Cup.
Wow.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's weird. So people would ask me when I was younger, like, I don't even remember what it was for, but it was like a questionnaire for school or something. And they had said, you know, would you rather play in the World Cup or would you rather be an Olympian? And to me, like just saying I'm an Olympian is means so much. And to, you know, be at the Olympic Games with other top athletes that play different sports, like that's such a unique experience. Whereas of course the World Cup, yeah, that's the best thing for soccer, but overall, just, I don't know, the Olympics to me just means something so much more.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can see that too. And I think we had someone on that went to the Olympics, and I had like 48 Olympic Village questions because I don't know why that fascinates me. Like all the athletes living together, like that must be the most amazing experience, ever. So I mean, you're gonna have to come back and tell us after you get. But here's another. I'm just gonna rip through like some rapid fire questions now. Like get to know Jordan a little bit. But before that, have you met Cara Lang? She's like your idol, correct?
Yeah. So I was probably 10 years old going to BMO and would bring like my cleats, my jersey, like everything possible. And after the game, I would go down to the front and I'd be like, mom, ask Cara to come over here. And she'd be like, she'd, wave her over. And then I would like stick out my cleats and she'd sign like everything for me. And I would just go home and I was so happy. And one time I asked her, I was like, hey, do you think that I could have your hair elastic? And she was like,
no way.
She was like, sweaty. Like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, please. And so she literally took out her sweaty ponytail, gave me her hair elastic. And I wore that hair elastic every single day of training until it broke. And when it broke, oh man, I was devastated. But then I just kept it in my soccer bag and, she was just my like biggest idol. And then I was with Oakville Soccer Club when I was 15. And that was the year that she decided to retire. Mm-hmm. So our club got wind of her retirement and was actually at our clubhouse. So my dad was like, Jordan, like Cara Lang's retiring. She's announcing her retirement on this day. And I was like, okay, I want to go. And he's like, okay. So I skipped school and he took me to Oakville Soccer Center. And I was the only like little girl there, but
oh my God.
Yeah. And I was able to like, watch her retirement speech, take pictures with her. And it was awesome. So yeah, I was a little bit of a stalker, but.
did you ask for her hairband after the retirement? Yeah, can I have another one? It broke.
Her hair was down. So, I missed
it. I almost feel like that was the biggest obstacle of your career when it broke.
Yeah. Mentally, I was just like, oh no.
You were done. That's
crazy. Yeah. What's your favorite show on Netflix?
Oh gosh. See, I'm not a TV girl. Like I hate TV.
That doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
I will give you, I loved Suits. I don't know if it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
I loved Suits mainly because it was in Toronto. So I kind of was like, oh, this is where this is. Suits, Grey's Anatomy, Ozark. I would get like, I would be sweaty and I have to do laps in my room because it was so intense.
Yeah,
it's true. The last book you read then?
Oh man, I have no idea. I love school, which is very weird, but books probably would be like in college. My college coach every year would make us read a motivational book. So I have no idea what the last one I read was, but it was in college.
Yeah. This is going to fall on deaf ears now, just getting to know you, but I'm going to ask you because we're going to get unhealthy here. A big cold glass of cream soda or Orange Crush, if you had to pick one. Yeah. I knew it. See, I knew she's, so, you knew it right she's away. So healthy.
You I'm know like, what? That should be the video clip we put out as like our sneak preview because your face was disgusted with Mark.
Yeah. I'm like sipping a cream soda right now, like during the whole interview.
Mostly none. Like, either are fine because I don't like any.
Really? What's a guilty pleasure drink for you?
Drink? See, that's like drinks are a waste of calories for me. If I'm gonna have the calories, I'm gonna eat something. Like to me, even like when I have a smoothie, I'm like, can you make it really thick? So it's like I'm eating something rather than just drinking the calories.
Interesting.
So, I don't really have a drink.
No, what about the food? A dessert? A something?
I love like cookies or like you see it like I do really like cookies, but I love like salty, like savory stuff like chips or fries. I would go.
Okay.
Yeah. You got it, Mark.
We got it. Miss Vicky's.
In the armor, Miss Vicky's.
I love it.
There's actually a bag at the door waiting. So just, it's weird. We already knew the answer.
Oh. Yeah. Imagine. Yeah. Well, Vanessa Gilles, I don't know if you listened to hers, but she used to eat, she used to have a can of sprinkles. And eat them on the way to just straight up cooking sprinkles.
I'm going to need to talk to her about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's some Canada questions. Who was the fastest player in that group.
Wow.
Michelle Prince.
Yeah, she's a, okay. Who is always last to the team bus?
Shalina, probably.
Whoa.
She was last to our meetings, but people were making fun of her because I guess she's used to the way England's doing things, but we would have a meeting at 3:15 and we'd start at 3:13 and she'd walk in at 3:14 and everyone sitting down, the meeting started and she was like, wait, what? It's 3:14. The meeting hasn't even started yet. But I mean, you know, you're late if you're not 5 minutes early. So
that's right. Okay. Who's She's the best captain. Singer? Who is the best singer in camp?
Oh my God. I don't know. Maybe like Desiree Scott, probably.
All right. Who's the, you know what? I think I know this question. Who's the hardest tackler in training? You? I know it has to be you.
Desiree Scott tackles a lot too. So. Yeah.
Okay. So it's a tie. Awesome. We'll give it a tie.
I feel like it's that position. It's kind of happening.
Do you get to keep all the training gear that you get and the cool stuff we see you guys walking in?
So we get to keep, we actually got a couple Nike articles this camp, like two sweaters and some leggings, which were nice. We got to keep that and then got to keep our jerseys, which was also nice. And then some of the training stuff, but not all of it. No.
Okay. When you're like, you were a sub against the Americans. We've had this conversation on this show a billion times.
Yeah.
Are you ready? Do you have your jersey on and your stuff done, or are you scrambling at the last second? Which substitute are you?
So I like to, I'm very prepared. However, I'm like always like actually watching the game, like trying to figure out what I can do when I go in, because I don't like not being prepared, especially when you're going in the midfield. It's like, it's not like a, let me just go in as forward and try and score a goal. It's like, no, if you don't understand what's going on in the game, like it's not going to be good. So I'm definitely prepared. But when I actually went into the Brazil game, I'm like, one of the things that I've just kind of done over the years is like, I love to chew gum during the game. Like, I know that's weird, but it's actually like a calming thing. Because your mind's distracted because it's focusing on something else. But I was warming up and I had spit out my gum because I didn't think that I was going on for the start of the second half. And then my coach is like, go warm up. I'm like, okay, great. Now I'm already on the field and like, I'm on the locker room. So I'm like, to our fitness coach, hey, do you have a piece of gum? No. I'm like, okay, great. Well, shouldn't be fine without some gum. So I wasn't really prepared in that situation.
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. I'm going to watch for that now.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not going to take up too much more of your time. I just wanted to thank you. And like, again, I think Steve alluded to it earlier, a theme in our show when we interview professional athletes, and I've said it now a few times, is just this simple, like no quit attitude. Like De Guzman, all these guys that we've spoken to have been told no, or told you're not good enough, or told this or that, there's no pathway for you, there's nothing. You created your own path. And I love that story. Like, to put all the jokes aside, every kid, every parent should be listening, you know, showing this to their kid, that create your own path. There's no straight path to anything. You make your own choices and desires and how you get to places. So I love this for that. And thank you for coming, because, you know, this has been a big one for us. And I really hope the young boys and girls can learn from your story.
Yeah. Thanks. Honestly, if I were to conclude, I would just say, like, there's so many times that, people are going to tell you that you can't do something, and you could feel bad for yourself all you want. You cannot make teams and you think that you deserve to make it. Great. You can once again feel bad for yourself. But I think that, you know, even my parents would always say, okay, well, you know, be better the next day. Like, they don't, this coach doesn't like you. That's fine. Like, just work on yourself and it will pay off. So there's been so many times where, you know, I don't think it's going to pay off, but you just got to keep reminding yourself that it will. So for people that are listening, it does pay off. I promise.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Steve? That's brilliant. No, I won't take too much time. That's one of our mission statements, is growing the game. And part of that story, and you overcoming obstacles and whatnot, is your willingness to speak out about the pathway and different things. And like, again, I've probably the 15th time I've mentioned the article with Laura, but there's others and stuff. So that's an impressive piece. And I have a lot of respect for you for doing that. And I think it'll make a difference. I really do.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good luck going forward. And when you become huge and you're holding your gold medal or whatever, like, don't forget us. Like, come back, show us this gold medal, and I will give you a bag of Miss Vicky's chips.
Fine, but you guys are from Ottawa, so, like.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, the Toronto-Ottawa thing, it always finds its way.
It made its way, and we almost got to the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, really? But, no, we appreciate it. Good luck, like, best, seriously, from us.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening today. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast and, of course, leave us a 5-star review. If you want to get in touch, you'll find us on Instagram at SoccerSnob1, on Twitter at SoccerSnobs1, by searching for us on Facebook, and of course on the web at www.soccersnobs.ca/listen. You can leave us your opinion, give us any comments, and if that's where you want to get nasty, feel free to do so.